95.1 W236 AF Burlington. 100.7 W264 BH Holly. The Pulse of Burlington County.
Z889, Tom Gagliardi, the Gagli Archives, and our special guest tonight. This is one from the vaults, my friends. The man Andy Goldner, guitar, bassist, sax, you name it, he does it. Andy Goldner of X-Magma fame. How are you, Andy?
I'm all right, thanks.
I got to thank you for sending us the digital recordings of these X-Magma records, including some of the vinyl you sent, but these X-Magma records are timeless.
Yeah, hopefully.
Now, a lot of people, Andy, have classified X-Magma as a krautrock band, but you guys really didn't have a lot of those krautrock you didn't have that krautrock persona.
I don't know why they called it krautrock, because we never really identified so much with that kind of but maybe even other bands who play more that krautrock style would not like to be called krautrock. I mean, at least not at, you know, in the 70s. Nowadays it's maybe different, but as we've been more into jazz and listening to, you know, Miles Davis and Coltrane and Tony Williams' Lifetime and all that, and that was a big influence for us, so we never thought we'd be like Ken or you know, the typical krautrock bands.
Now, of course, you've had three albums, actually two that were officially released, and then finally the third one, which came out a few years back. But along with you, Andy, we also had Tommy Bailiff in the band, and of course, Fred Braceful, the late, great Fred Braceful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you guys, how did you all meet? I know that Fred was in a band called Etc., and I know that you and Tommy had been in a band called Mooley and the Misfits, correct?
Yeah, that was Tommy's band, and my band at that time was called the Fivefold Shade.
That's right.
But we met, and I joined the Misfits later on, yeah?
Yeah. You guys met in Stuttgart, correct?
Yeah. We were raised there and grown up and went to school in Stuttgart, and you know, he had his band and I had mine, and we met in 69. He called me up and asked me if I could join the band, his band, because their bass player was ill and he was in hospital and he couldn't play anymore and he had to stay there for a while. So I joined in, and we played about half a year with his band, and then I suggested to get out of that band and start something new. You know, so we met a young drummer, and I was 18 at the time, 69, Tommy 2 years older, and we knew a drummer, he was like 16 years old, Hannes Mayer, and so I asked Tommy if we would not be able to do a trio, because he was a bit hesitating, because he said, like, well, then I have to do the soloing, and without guitar, I don't know if I can do that, but we did it, you know, and we started Magma. At the time, we were called Magma.
That's right.
Till later on, we found out that there is another band, a French band, called Magma, so we had to change our name somehow.
But were you guys first? You were first, weren't you?
I'm not sure. They had their album first out. You know, we didn't have an album out, and we seen this album from the French band Magma, their first album. And we didn't have anything out, so we had to change. We thought we had to change, and we were searching for a name, because we've been already quite well known in Germany for Magma, you know, and it was really hard for us to change the name. So we found a name called Werewolf. We were called Werewolf. And we had gigs, and we were wondering why there have been always, like, you know, like what you have, the FBI and like civil cops in the house, and you could smell the cops always at these gigs, and we were wondering why they are there.
Yeah.
And one day, the guy where we printed the posters, he said, yeah, well, Werewolf, that was right after the Second World War. That was an underground gang of Nazis, old Nazis, who still wanted to do their shit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't want to be Werewolf anymore.
Right.
We didn't be in that part, you know. And But we looked at the poster talking about these things, and underneath the werewolf we had X Magma, you know. So we said, well, then we call us X Magma, you know. Came to that name.
Now,
like that.
When you met up with Fred, now Fred's dad was a military guy, and he had been stationed all around.
That was when he met with Wolfgang Dauner. Like, Fred is like 13 years older than I am, and he came in the 60s to Germany, and he met with Wolfgang Dauner, and I think he played like 10 years with Wolfgang before we met him, and they had this band, etc., and we liked them a lot, you know. I mean, we went to see them sometimes, and just to look at Fred, you know, I mean, not even the playing, that was fantastic, but just to look at him, the way he played, was so good to see him play. I've never seen a drummer like that, really.
No.
And we were happy to meet him, and we asked him to visit us. We've been living in southern Germany in a big farmhouse with like about 30 people, and we asked him to come, and he came, and we asked him to join the band, because we were just the two of us, Tommy and me, because we didn't get along with this young drummer, so we had to change this, you know. And during that time, when we'd be just the two of us, Tommy and me, we played with a band called CeeLo, a German dude, Dieter CeeLo, and he played saxophone and flute through some bizarre electronic equipment he built himself, you know. So he had very strange sounds on the sax, and he asked us to play with him. And as he was also like into that improvisation music, so we didn't have to change a lot from X Magma to this kind of stuff what he did. And he was playing with Fred, you know, on drums, and sometimes other drummers, and sometimes we played with two drummers. And he had that very well connected to all these jazz clubs in Germany. So we had big tours with him all the time, earning money and waiting for a new drummer. Sort of. And we met Fred there because he was playing with us sometimes, you know, there in that band. So we invited him to our place. And he came, and he's seen all these people there, you know, because it was like 30 people in that farmhouse, and really colorful, you know, from everywhere, Canada, America, from Britain, from France, from Korea. We've been really, you know, freaks and hippies. And we asked him to join our band, you know, X Magma, and there was one room was still empty, you know. We said, that could be your room if you stay with us, you could live here, and so, and he did, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the way we came together, and we've been living together in that big farmhouse. And well, you have to imagine this farmhouse with them many people, you know, boys and girls, like about 30 people. And next, the neighbor was a farmhouse with Turkish people, because at that time, you know, after the Second World War, Germany's economy got up real strong, and they needed workers here. So in the early 50s came Italian people and Spanish people, later on Croatian people, and then at last the Turkish people. And most of them people, they were not allowed to get a, they didn't get a German passport, you know. They were just allowed to live there and work. So they stayed in that farmhouse, mostly men. And, you know, what they earned, they sent to their families in Turkey. And imagine when the weather was nice, we'd been outside in our garden, and the girls running around topless, you know, and then Turkish guys, you know, Muslims. I mean, it was a culture shock for
yeah.
them. But maybe it was good that way.
To
know?
Say the least, to say the least.
And, huh?
To say the least, Andy.
Yeah. And, you know, and there was, we've been living in this little village, like just four houses, and the third house, there was some old Nazis living, you know. They had this pub and some rooms for overnight thing, you know, to stay at some little hotel. And we hated them, they hated us, you know. And the fourth house was from a German politician from the government, you know, the German government, just a weekend house. So he was mostly, he was out, not there. But when he came, or when they came, you know, with all them bodyguards and them bulletproof Mercedeses, you know, imagine a village like, you know, like this, you know.
Right, right.
With four different houses and so different people, you know, like, I think that was the only place on earth like that, you know.
It's a wild story when I read about the recording of the first album and about some of the things that you did running into the woods. I won't get into details, but you definitely were in spirits when, you know, you did some of the construction for this album. Tell me about the track that you were going to about to play here that you played fretless bass on called Kudu. And tell us a little bit about this piece before we play it.
Yeah, that was a live recording, and we played live, and a friend of us, Joe Lindauer, he was a Canadian. He came like 72. He came to Germany, and we met him in Stuttgart, and he visited us quite often. And he's a painter, and you see on the artwork, most of the artwork on the CDs, the paintings, it's his paintings, and he recorded us live. And I don't remember really where we played, somewhere in Germany, and we recorded it, and we didn't really cut it, and so we just, you know, recorded it, improvised, and that was the B-side of the first album, you know.
We're going to do right here, Andy, is we're going to check this track out. Once again, friends, this is from the new reissued CDs that came out a few years back from X Magma. That features both the first and the second album, Gold Ball. But this one here is from the first album. This is a track called Kudu. Andy Goldner's with us. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Andy Goldner from X Magma, and you're listening to Gagli Archives.
Let's go.
Music right there from the first Ex Magma album, a track called Kudu. And with us, of course, Andy Goldner, one of the Focal Points, guitar bassist, man who also did some lead vocals, but vocals really weren't prevalent on the first two albums.
No, we didn't do much vocals at that time. You know, when I played with that old band, like the Fivefold Shade in the 60s, we've been singing, like, you know, we had a singer and three others doing the backings, and so we were very much into singing. But when I came together with Tommy, we decided to leave all kinds of words out of the music. You know, we didn't want to get that specific, not that clear with meanings, you know, like what words do, you know.
Right.
We wanted to just to leave things open. Yeah, that's why we didn't use any singing, because if you sing, you mostly use words, you know.
Yeah. Now, this album seemed to be a little bit more serious in the sense that, you know, you guys were actually, you know, wasn't as freeform as the first album was. I mean, still, there was a lot of experimentation on the second album called Gold Ball, but it seemed you guys were a little more tighter, a little more organized.
Yeah, yeah, we started rehearsing, you know, because the first one, the first album is completely 100% improvised music. You know, we didn't make up anything at the first album. It's just, you know, recorded, improvised. And with overdubs, the first song, the first tune we did in a studio in Germany, and we did overdubs, but it was all improvised.
Yeah.
And the second one was produced by Connie Plank, and you know, we started to rehearse things in our farmhouse, and we wanted to get a bit more precise about certain things, and yeah, still improvised stuff on it, but we got more concrete there, yeah.
Now, when you guys did the recording at Connie's studio near Cologne, you guys had become friends with a band that is also a big favorite on our program, Inkron.
Yeah. We've been big friends together because they've been living up north and we've been south, you know, and they had also a big house called Winthrop, and it's the Count, I forgot the name, a Count, he gave this for free, you know, so they could live there without paying any rent or so. And when we played up north, we stayed at their place, and when they played in the south of Germany, they stayed at our place. So we've been close friends and had lots of sessions, you know, and, well, you know, smoking and having fun, you know.
Yeah. But you guys had a lot of fun with this second record, and things were really in ascension for you guys. People were coming to your shows more and more when you did play, and you know, coming to this album, there's one piece on here called Jam Factory, which, you know, you made a reference that it's for insane people only. Tell us a little bit about Jam Factory before we spin it here.
Yeah, well, the lyrics is about, like, you know, how to say, yeah, it's like it ends like now you buy your own apple again, sort of, you know. It's like the how can I explain that? It's like economy somehow works, the economy in general, you know. You do something and someone else might rip you off with it, and later on you buy your own stuff again in a warehouse or in the supermarket or something like that, you know.
Yeah, but there are some pretty insane rhythm patterns in this. I mean, first it's in you know, each cycle, of course, being, like you said, in 10 bars, and the first, second, third, fifth, seventh, and ninth bars in 8/8, and then the fourth, sixth, and eighth is in you know, 7/8, 6/8, and 5/8, and of course the 10th being in 4/8 to the bar. I mean, that's insane.
Difficult. It was very difficult for us to play live because we had to count a whole lot, you know. That was exactly the opposite of improvisation, you know. So it was really, we had to count every bar, and you could not, this song you just could not play by heart and like that, you know, just playing it and remembering everything. You had to count it and really not miss a beat.
What we're going to do right here, Andy, is check out this track. Once again, it's called Jam Factory, for People Insane. This is from the second Ex Magma album. This is from the album Gold Ball, 1974, originally released on Disjunctor Records, and now, of course, on Daily Records. We'll talk more about that in a bit. This is Ex Magma.
you said it's true that you gave your biggest apple to the bosses of a giant factory to win the prize many have tried before. You didn't win, so go and buy your own apple again. In a jam jar.
I never get tired of that song, Andy. That one is full of steam. And you, Tommy and Fred, were really like one unit. You guys were one piece.
Yep. We've been a team, yeah.
Yeah. Now, of course, the third album, things really got serious for you guys. At this point, you know, you guys wanted to do a double album, if I'm correct.
Yeah. I mean, we were not, at the beginning, we didn't know exactly what to do, because we've been at Kanye's studio, and at that time we've been already living in France, in Paris, and we had our little farmhouse in the Normandy and a little apartment in town. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for recording, we went to Kanye and we rehearsed a few songs and went to Kanye's place, and And we started recording, and we got nothing done. You know, we tried for 3 days to get something on tape, but nothing worked out. We've been always playing wrong or doing things wrong or not remembering the changes or whatever. It was really bad, you know. So Connie suggested, and he said, let's drop some acid. Sorry, I have to say this.
Right.
And at that time, and we were listening to Jimi Hendrix and other stuff one night, and then the next day we started recording again, and it worked out really well. And we could, in 1 week we recorded the whole double album. Later on we found out it's going to be a double album, because there have been also improvised parts and songs, and you know, the songs we composed were like maybe for one album. But as we were in very good shape then, after this night, we just came out, everything came out, and we could play and improvise, and after a week we had recorded the double album, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of people at the time were saying that you guys were sounding the most mature of the previous two albums, and although the first two, in my opinion, were fantastic, it seemed that this one just seemed to be like, you know, all the influences showing. Soft Machine, Miles Davis, like you said, Jimi Hendrix. And, you know, there was almost a thought between you guys that I think we're getting too big. Did you think that at all?
You know, we stayed in France, and we got famous in France, you know, because we had to leave Germany, because it was like we played north, south, west, east, everywhere, each club, each festival, and we were tired of the German situation, because we've been also like, you know, when you been on the road, you've been stopped all the time, because it was the days where Baader-Meinhof group was on the loose, and the cops been trying to catch them, and so we had all kinds of guns pointed at our head, you know. So one day we decided in 1974 we have to leave Germany, because it's getting too tight, you know.
Right.
And I mean, it, you know, we were cool, but if you want to live and have a free life as we wanted, and you'd be always hassled by the cops, you know, you can't do anything anymore. So we thought, well, we had to go to France, and we had friends there, and they invited us, and we stayed at their place, and after a while we said, well, why not stay in there, you know, and that's what we did, and we went to record the third album at Connie's place. And we wanted to be more structured, you know, so that's the difference from the first to the second to the third. The music got more and more structured, but still on the third one, it's still like half-half, you know, half is improvised, half is really composed, yeah.
Yeah.
Composing. And, yeah.
What was one of your favorite pieces off of this?
The third one?
Yes.
Hard to say. I have a whole lot of... I mean, one of the ones I like best is It's So Nice.
Oh, It's So Nice. That's another good track. But I guess my question is why didn't the album come out in 1975?
Yeah, that was the thing. We've been living in, as I said, in France, and we had no company in Germany, so we went to the French company. Well, what's the name? Very big company.
Spilax, or
that's where the Beatles were also, and Jimi Hendrix. I forgot the name for now. Sorry, big company, and they, you know, they said, okay, we take it, but not as a double album. You know, we only take. You have to throw out the takes we don't want, and we do one, just as a single album, and that's what we didn't want to do. You know, so we've been fighting back and forth with them, you know, and trying to get things done, but they insisted, and we insisted. and you know, so we didn't do it. And soon after that, we disbanded, not because of that not coming out album, but, you know, like, Fred wanted to go back to Germany, and we wanted to stay in France, so... that was all at the same time, you know, so the album never showed up, because we've been also not playing anymore, you know, soon after that hassle with the company.
So you
Barclay Records, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's right. But then you guys pretty much went on your own, like you said. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it just wasn't, you know, cohesive anymore to stay together. But you and Tommy and Fred stayed friends.
Yes, we did, but you know, we've been in France, and he was in Germany, and he did other stuff in Germany, and we tried to do Ex Magma with other musicians. What we did, we had another drummer, and we had a percussion player. We did some more gigs, but for us, it was not the same. So Tommy and me, we said, come on, let's stop it for now. Let's do maybe whatever, and we went back to Germany too. Our manager and the road managers, they stayed in France, and then I went to London and Paris and back and forth and Stuttgart. And then Peter Wolbrand, you know, the guitar player from Crandy, called me up one day in Stuttgart and asked me to come up, because they've been also fed up, him and his brother who plays the drums at Crandy. They wanted to do something else, so they asked me to come up to their place and try something, you know. So I went there visiting them, and I was into guitar at that time, Peter the guitar too, so we had no bass player. So I got a bass player from Paris, Lou Marignon. He was a very, very good bass player, and he played with all the big rock and rollers and jazz people in France. And he wanted to do something new, so he came, and We tried a four-piece band, you know, with the two Crown people, me and the French bass player. And that would have been the supergroup in Germany, you know, like many years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe Blind Faith or so was for Britain or the whole world. We would have been that kind of, you know, thing for Germany. But I think we were too egoistic, each of us, and we never made it, really.
Yeah.
We tried things out, and half a year we tried this and that, and you know, it was like too big-headed or whatever. It was not the right time for us, so we never made it. And I started my solo career, because I had songs, and I called Tommy up and asked him to come up north, and yeah, he said yeah, and he came. And I asked the bass player if he'd play in my band, in the Andy Goldner band, and he said yeah, okay, let's try. And we found a nice drummer who was living nearby, Vintrup, nearby the Kranz place, and he played that, you know, style like Mitch Mitchell, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, very nice, very good. So we asked him, and he was okay. So we had this four-piece band, and we started playing my songs and recording demos. And I gave the demos one to Connie, and he was interested to produce it. And I gave another demo to Giorgio Gomelski. Maybe if people who are listening don't know, he was the first manager of the Rolling Stones, and later on he was the manager of the Yardbirds throughout all the Yardbirds years. And I met him, I knew him from Paris, and we liked each other quite well, and I gave him the demos, and he wanted to produce it himself too. So I had two producers, and I decided to do it with Connie, because he's done all the other stuff we did, you know, and we've been close friends. And you know, he visited us when we've been living in France, when he had holidays with his wife Krista. He came to relax at our place in the Normandy, and we've been recording at his place or visiting him. Even if we didn't record, we went to Connie's studio, met Brian Eno there or other people who recorded, you know, and
that must have been great.
Helped them out too sometimes and whatever, you know. And so I was happy that we did that, my first solo album, also in the Connie's studio.
Yeah, now you did a few albums. I mean, you did the A Gude Burger Band, which was...
Yeah, that came later. That came in the 80s.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, of course, yeah. There was the other one that, as you mentioned, featured you along with Peter Wolbrandt also.
Yeah.
Helmut Hattler as well. And you had...
Yeah, that was Peter's solo album. That was also like maybe 1980 or so. And the funny thing was, the good thing was that Connie... he had also a mobile studio, I mean, like 24 track, you know, 2-inch machine, a big one still, but he had a bus. And so he went to Vintrup with the equipment and left the equipment at Vintrup at Peter's place, you know. And Peter asked me to sing something on it, and he played most of the instruments himself. He's a good drummer too, you know, and he can play the bass, and as we know, he's a great guitar player. For me, he's one of the best guitar players ever, you know, in electric guitar. And but he was good in drums and bass, so he did most of the instruments. But Jan, his brother, the drummer of Kran, he did a few songs too, and they worked also like really very specially. Like one song is like Jan, he plays the drums without any other instruments. He just plays drums, and then Peter took them that part, you know, where he played like 5 minutes or so, the drums, and then he added some guitar, some bass, and then I added the singing to it and wrote in real fast, you know. I listened to the song and I wrote the lyrics right there in maybe half an hour, 2 hours, something like that, and sang on it. So it was also like it sounds really structured. Then the song sounds really like composed from beginning to the end, but it was totally improvised, layer by layer. You know?
Yeah. Now, of course,
very funny.
Yeah, but you have a album coming out very soon. It's going to be on anthologyrecordings.com. Infinity is due to be out. Correct?
Yeah. That's my first album, my first solo album. That was the one Connie produced. And it never showed the light. I mean, it was an album as an LP, but I never got it out as a CD. So now you can download it at, not yet, but soon, at Anthology, I think next week. The Pagma albums are at Anthology Recordings. You can get them now.
Yeah. And I want to tell I want to tell everyone your great website too, which you know, a lot of these bands that, you know, kind of disappeared back in the 1970s don't have a website that's as elaborate, in xmagma.de, and that's where you tell all the stories of all the recordings, and you're, of course, the time with you and Tommy and Fred, and of course 1995 Fred passed away. Was there ever any thoughts about reuniting X-Magma?
Yeah, that was the thing, man, because I called him maybe 2 weeks before he died, and we've been talking together, and he said he's got a real bad problem because he had this cancer. And I said, yeah, come on. Well, we, because he was living in Munich, and we've been like more up north, south, in Stuttgart, and we wanted to go and visit him, you know, and talk about the reunion, you know, after all these years, and we would be playing now. I believe we would be great together again.
Yes.
Like, 2 weeks later, when we called, we didn't make it to see him again. And, that was the end of it.
Yeah, pretty sad. But you and Tommy still stay in touch.
Yeah, we stay in touch. And I got my studio here in the Swabian Alps, not far from Stuttgart. And he's coming. He lives in Stuttgart, but he's coming quite often here. And we're recording new stuff, you know, and we have a drummer nearby, and he helps us out sometimes, and we do a lot in the duo, him and me, together, and maybe next year, if things go right, maybe we can get something going live and get a new album out.
Would you call it X-Magma?
Not yet. I mean, we have a nice, very good drummer here, but we would need another drummer, really. Fred Braceful is hard to find.
But I'm sure,
you know, in the 70s we've been in touch with Mitch Mitchell after he's, you know, like, because I knew this one woman of Keith Richards, and I asked her to connect us with Mitch Mitchell and stuff. And we somehow didn't get together, and now the manager in Paris, he said, yeah, Mitch Mitchell, he's very often in France, and he might find the contact and stuff. But then he died too, you know, not long ago, as you know.
Yeah.
So we wanted to meet him, actually.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of drummers that could at least fit, because I tell you, I think the experimental rock world would go crazy to see X Magma with a fourth album, or
yeah,
even...
we could do it, man. We have still ideas, and I got the studio, you know, got an old mixing table, a big one from Hollywood, made in Hollywood in the early 70s, and I had 8 people to carry it in my house, you know. So it's a real analog thing, and I got a 2-track machine, and I got also like a digital equipment, but I can work analog, and we could get the sound still, the one we have, and I have parts of Connie's studio, because Connie Plank died too, you know, so the studio doesn't exist anymore, but I bought some stuff from Connie's studio, and it's in my studio now, so we're really close, we could be, you know, close to the sound we had. And if some drummer now here out there listens to what I say, please go to xmagma.de and contact us. You know, if you play some kind of Keith Moon or Tony Williams or Mitch Mitchell style, please.
Well, you know what?
write us an email.
We're going to help you with this, Andy. We're gonna try to get you a drummer for an X Magma 4 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. Well, I want to see it, and I'm excited that you're even contemplating it. But I want to.
Yeah, because we're so good together, Tommy and me, you know, and we got even better with our instruments and ideas. And so it's, you know, it's not like we're doing some old stuff again, you know, and going back to the past, and we don't see any future, and we just dig in the past. That's not our thing, you know. We're going on.
Yeah. Well, I got to thank you, Andy, for taking the time out. And I don't want to say that this is goodbye, because I have a feeling we're going to be talking again soon, maybe in another year.
That'd be good.
Yeah, it'd be good. But I want to play this track to close it out before we wrap things up tonight. And this track, as you just mentioned, It's So Nice, which really is a fun track, and I like it myself. But before we let you go, is there anything you're listening to at home? If I was to go into your CD player, what am I going to find in there?
At the moment, you will find, sounds funny, but you will find Hardest Night from the Beatles, because I'm waiting for the other 15 CDs, you know, from the new stereo box.
That's right.
The new remastered stereo box from the Beatles. I didn't listen to them much in the last 40 years. And I ordered at Amazon the stereo box, but it's sold out, as you know. It comes maybe in October. I can get it 1st or 2nd of October. They can deliver again. And I bought me the Hardest Night to hear how it sounds, you know, the remastered stuff, you know. And I must say, it's really, great.
Well, we appreciate it, Andy. And we're not going to say goodbye. We know we're going to talk to you again soon. But once again, friends, the band X Magma, the website is at xmagma.com. You can also check out the website to pick up the records at daily-records.com. And of course, the upcoming Infinity recording from Andy Goldner, which will be available at anthologyrecordings.com. Andy, we thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
And in the meantime, friends, this is a track, one of my favorites, like Andy's. This is a track called It's So Nice.
Hi, this is Andy Goldner from X Magma, and you're listening to Gagli Archive.
They would care. I really don't know why.
Special thanks to Andy Goldner of X Magma. That was X Magma 3 on the track It's So Nice. Check out the website xmagma.de, also Daily Records at daily-records.com. If you like the interview, you can check out our website in the next week or so, as it'll be up for podcast. Andy Goldner, great guy. On the other side of this, an album released this week, 37 years ago. Stay tuned.